I am Mike Tankel, and I am a partner and optimist at To Be Continued.
Welcome to Passion to Power with your host, Michelle Zeitlin. She's a creative producer who quote-unquote wears many hats. She's also a talent and literary manager and founded the company Morzat Productions and Management. She develops people and projects across all media. Her guests encompass the gamut, from artists to authors, actors to activists. Please welcome Michelle Zeitlin, Passion to Power.
Surround yourself with people who are not like yourself. Simplify and amplify. That's what we do.
That's what the creators want. Somebody who believes in their story. And then when you want to add to it and help them, they see it that way, as opposed to competing. And, you know, especially when we're dealing in the fragile egos of the business, we want to be supportive as opposed to combative.
So you've been a marketer, you've been in filmmaking, you're a visionary, and you've worked some really interesting clients, including Cirque du Soleil, is my understanding. So I would love to hear what you're working on right now. Let's start with a little background about how you started your company and your sort of evolution, if you will.
Wow. Well, that's a lot. Thank you for having me here. It's a real pleasure. And I think, you know, to jump in, To Be Continued is really came out of storytelling. Stories aren't meant to have an ending. Stories are meant to have continuity. And in Hollywood, we certainly look for the franchises, that we look for the never-ending stories so that they can keep moving forward. And so it speaks to that, but it also speaks to the relationships we have in business. And too much of Hollywood has become transactional, and it's not about the people. And I'd like to believe it is about the people. It's about the relationships. It's about the respect we earn on the way up, on the way down, and wherever we are in between, because those people are the lifelines. And so, you know, a deal is only a good deal if both sides win. If one side takes from another, it's not a good deal, and it's not going to be a lasting deal, and it's not going to be a relationship you have or earn respect from. So a little genesis there. What are we working on right now? Wow. You know, we are in development on a couple interesting stories and doing a lot with the MENA region, the Middle East, North Africa. And actually, you know, each time we speak to people there, we learn a little bit more about the culture. And so reposition a few things to try to get into the deeper emotional and cultural connection. And the reason we, you know, participate in the MENA region is because there's a rich range of stories to be told from there. But it's also, there's a people who we in America don't understand, and that represents a huge opportunity to educate and monetize. And I think with all that's going on in the world right now, if we can do some things that bring people closer together and help us understand that we are far more alike than we are apart, that we can do a little good through this. Well, it's about the stories behind the words and where they came from, what they meant, and who brought them to life, and how we pay respect to the people who did so. And, you know, bring them to new generations, make them part of our culture, you know, get that continuity going.
How did you focus on MENA, and what are those special stories that you're helping to share?
Well, I'm partnered up with someone who's become a dear, dear friend, and you know, we started the simplicity of, you know, he and I coming from different worlds, having these amazing conversations about what we want to accomplish and how we see entertainment, not as propaganda, but as cultural education and ways to bring people together that normally don't get that chance. And so our conversations continued over the years. We become dear, dear friends. And We got involved with an Oscar submission from one of the countries in the region, And the director asked us, what would you do to this? How can we you help us? And we watched it and came back with a range of ideas, from changing the poster to even changing the title and how to position it. And the reason we did that was we saw that it was a beautiful film. We didn't want to change it, but it was being told to people who already knew the story, as opposed to inviting people who didn't know the story in. And, you know, so it's like, found the most emotional moment, put that out, said, this should be the poster, kind of, you know, took that and incorporated into the name, and was like, wow, I need you guys on everything. We're like, this might be an opportunity. And so we actually created a company that's around the, supports the MENA region, called Aminakin. And so combining MENA with American, and we don't want to see the stories brought up by streamers, studios who are going to make them in the US image or stop them from being made. What we want to do is support the storytellers from the region and help make their stories inviting for American audiences, because that's going to do a lot for their revenue stream as well as the education, but also it allows them to protect their stories. We've seen things happen before, China, Europe, a bit of South America, India, and it's like, we have the chance here to take this and showcase our similarities, not our differences, and to bring people together, move against stereotypes, and show that there's emotional connections, emotional bonds, some of them historical, some of them, you know, from the pages of a script. But we think we can do a lot of good that way. Well, we had started this before the latest eruption. And with that, we see even greater importance in doing it. When you try to tell people what to think, it doesn't work. And they dig, you know, their heels in deeper to what they currently believe, especially when you tell people something might be wrong. We see that politically here, regardless of what side you're on, we're not inviting people to the other side. We're telling them they're wrong. And we're doing that culturally as well. And so with what's going on right now, we saw a greater need and a greater opportunity to do so. It certainly brings up a slew of challenges, but everyone we've spoken to has been incredibly receptive.
And so are these full-length films that you're developing from the MENA region?
Yes.
Okay, and I guess we're in a wait-and-see mode, because it sounds like you can't talk about it at this point.
I can't. I wish I could. I wish I could, and love to show you some, you know, art, some of the ideas and the ways the pitches come together and how these stories get told, because you'll be like, wow, that's kind of cool.
So is your partner in the Middle East at this time?
He grew up there, but he's here in the States now.
As an entrepreneur, as somebody who's had his own company, how did you get here, and what were some of the educational merits that brought you here, and maybe some of the different types of skill sets that brought you here?
Wow, that's a big one. You know, we decided to make an ad agency basically in college and compete in, there were a range of student competitions, but also there were clients we could take on and projects we could do, you know, obviously for less money, but we'd learn a lot and built up a powerful reputation, not just on campus, but with New York ad agencies. We were trading typefaces, we were doing work, providing a college viewpoint, all sorts of things, meeting some of the movers and shakers of the industry. It was fantastic. What we didn't realize until we got into the competition circuit on this was that a lot of schools had formal advertising programs. And what that meant was everybody was brought through the same education, the same conversation, the same mindset. There was no diversity of thought. And we didn't have a formal program. I was in, you know, as a marketing major, we had communications major, we had English major, we had people that were from the School of Design and Art, and we had this great mix of people come together and participate, and a huge amount of people. And it was that range of thinking that taught me more than any course ever could, because I got to understand perspective. I got to see where other people were coming from, and not just, you know, education, but economic, racial, sexual, you know, whatever, you know, differences we all bring together, we learned from them. And we learned how they thought. We learned what mattered to them. And I, that connected. And it carried through as I started my career and in the work I was doing, but also with the Advertising Club in New York and District 2 of the American Advertising Federation, where I was brought out to speak about that subject, about, you know, bringing people together and learning from everybody, not having going through the linear process with the same folks, and was speaking at a conference and then went up to LA. And that's kind of, you know, how I wound up out here.
Circuitous.
Yes, very much. And, you know, lessons that continue through today. It's like, you know, don't surround yourself with people that are like you. Surround yourself with people that are as far from you as possible, and you're going to learn an incredible amount more, not just about them, but about yourself.
What do you think that the big ad agencies look for in young people? Because you said perspective, you brought something really fresh. I would imagine the gray advertising, the Ogilvy's, God, name some of the other big ones, Shia Day. I mean, you know, the big agencies of their time, what are they looking for? And what kind of perspective did you bring that was so exciting?
I can't speak to what they're specifically looking for. I'm sure, you know, much of it is as creative based as it is revenue based and cost based on that front. But I think what we brought was an openness, a willingness to listen, a willingness to think a little bit outside the box and know that the audience didn't look like us, but we need to speak to them. We needed to be understood. We will, you know, went for a way to break through. And, you know, it's kind of helped shape from the work I've done to kind of the core promise of my business, which I'm set up as, you know, as I think concise as we can be, which is to simplify and to amplify. Simplify and amplify. That's what we do. We take complex marketing, complex communications, complex challenges. We try to simplify them. And then we try to, you know, in doing so, we try to do it in a way that can make a little noise for you without having to just purchase media. Because purchasing media is the easy part. Having a message that resonates amongst an audience is a difficult part, especially today when you're competing in so much of the craziness of the world.
So do people still purchase advertising time and space? Does that still work the same with all of our new social media platforms and streaming?
Absolutely. They have to. I mean, we're seeing the Super Bowl sold out at $7 million per 30 seconds. That we're hearing that, you know, advertisers are going a little safer this year because while they want to go viral, they don't want to go viral for the wrong reasons this time, you know, and it's, there's a tinderbox. So, you know, risk aversion falls in, research falls in, and research, you know, can tell you some things, but the audiences don't know how to respond when you're researching something they've never seen or heard before.
So you have to give them something they're a little familiar with and then maybe take it on a tiny different diversion.
Well, and that's kind of what Hollywood does, right? We give them something familiar, be it a star, a story, a character, but then we push it. We take it to another place. We give you an experience that, you know, drops your jaw and gets you talking about it when you walk out of a theater, when you step away from your television or your phone or whatever you're watching it on, and get you talking about it and sharing it with people. And to me, that's the beauty of streaming and episodic, whereas you get the chance to build an audience over time. in film and going to theater, you've got one weekend, and that's an expensive weekend to hit your mark and to live for a second weekend. You know, but this ability to build that audience means you can work alongside your distributor, alongside your partners. And it also goes into part of what we do, which is, you know, working with writers and directors who, more on the indie side, who tend to rush into production because, hey, we've got the camera, crew's ready, we got the cast, we can do it, let's do this. Like, slow down. Let's think about your story. And we review it through a marketing lens. And what we do with that marketing lens, say, okay, if you do X, Y, or Z, we can expand your potential audience. And it can be from bookending the story. It can be from changing a character from male to female, white to black, young to old, whatever it might be. But looking at it in a way that, you know, gives you some audience expansion. We continue with, you know, creating sales materials for them. And then sometimes produce, sometimes, you know, just do some project-based work. But it's going through with that and helping them see that there's more to do, more opportunity than they imagine. As they get their shooting boards together, we look through and say, okay, 5-10 minutes a day, here's the extra content we want to capture. So you have a library of marketing materials. And we're going through the script. Hey, this speech is really great. Can we cut this down a little bit? Because this, I see this as narration to work with a trailer. You know, whatever it might be, or these are the sound bites that might go viral. So let's really capture that. Here's a way that this joke or this theme or this idea can have some continuity through your story and be a branded element for you. All those things that, you know, folks who, when you're focused on production, you're not thinking through. So we try to be that addition to their mindset and give that perspective.
So do you have a sort of a set of protocol steps that you use with your clients?
Yeah, I wish it was as formal and organized that I could just rattle them off. But every session we do starts with not us telling them what to do, but us listening to what they want to achieve, understanding their story. I've been quoted on extreme listening and, you know, do a lot of that. And when you hear that, it's like, okay, our job is not to challenge them, is to accelerate their dream. It's to, you know, make it happen better, you know, showcase where, hey, if we do X, Y, or Z, we can make it stronger for you. Here are some flaws that might be in it that you didn't see. Here's some opportunities based on what you have. And all of it is based not on, you know, needing to add millions of dollars to the budget, but it's how do we maximize what you're already going to do from an asset standpoint, from a time standpoint, from an opportunity standpoint. Taking a look at what you're doing and making it work harder for you, which a lot of folks, you know, just want to take the money and, you know, spend it. Oh, you got to give us this. You got to give us that. We got to reshoot this. Like, no, here's what you're doing. Here's what we want. Let's do it together. And we become an extension of the team. But at the same time, we're also building a trusted relationship because they see we're not just trying to take their money. We're believing in their story.
So I know this is probably a cliche question for you, but you really are the quintessential right left brain advisor, aren't you? With a mathematical background and then working with writers, directors. So you're like left brain, right brain, you know, that's very interesting.
I was told at one point, you have to decide you can't be, you know, analytical, strategic, and creative. And I was like, why not? And to me, creativity has an element of math to it. That's what we do when we're trying to solve a creative problem, because if we can, the tighter we get the boundaries of where we should be playing, the closer and quicker we get to the answer which we need. And so understanding your boundaries you get from listening, you understand the brand, understand the guidelines, understand the budget, understand the audience, pulling all that together gets you closer to an answer and allows you to reveal that sooner than later.
You had said something earlier to me about working in Asia, and I would love for you to expand and expound a little bit on your background internationally.
Sure. And, you know, did a lot with the Chinese film market as that was growing. And part of the way I work, I was I was shocked at one of the conferences to hear a major studio head of production speak to a room that was 60% Chinese and say, give me your money and get out of my way, which was incredibly disrespectful. They saw it, they knew. And I spoke to a number of the executives about it, and they said, we understand this is the American way. We call this part of our education, which was a very interesting, you know, take on it. But when I was working in China, we saw their understanding of the film business. Sometimes a little, it was a little literal, especially when it came to data. And while there are a number of phenomenal, wonderful films that come out of the region, there's also some that are like have a lot to them. They're very complicated. And what we saw, and it, you know, we peel back, it's like, well, you know, the client would say, oh, well, we learned that 40% of the market likes drama, 20% likes comedy, 10% likes horror, you know, 10% likes romance, whatever. So I figured if we put it all together, we would get everybody. And that's where, you know, was happening with some of the stories at the time.
Oh, those scripts must have been messy.
Yes, yes. They can be a little complicated, but, you know, we worked with them and said, well, you got to segment, you know, do things and how to simplify, how to think about also building an audience for your film before it comes out, as opposed to finishing it and then trying to figure out who the audience is, which is why things sat between, you know, completion and distribution. And so did that. Also got to do some work in the casino space of Macau and the Cotai Strip, creating branded elements for that, helping, you know, bring entertainment and share that, which coupled with a lot of Las Vegas work that we had done at the time, too. So, you know, entertainment is a multi-pronged, you know, tool. And it's, you know, how do you deliver a thought-provoking, emotional escape to people that leaves them with something to talk about afterward. What do business people want? They want low cost and high revenue. That's as simple as you can make it, right? What do creative people want? They want audience. So if we can help them tell a great story without spending a fortune and get it in a way that gets people talking, we're going to satisfy the business people as well. And it's making that, you know, united effort that says we're not jeopardizing art. We're creating art that gets people talking. And when people are talking, that's when people start, more people start watching. And one of the things we learned, in the marketing of Twilight years ago, it was, we saw that there was a, not a huge fan base when film production started, but a very rabid fan base who craved information. And so we nurtured that fan base and we turned them for the first time into their own media channel. So when the initial, you know, web and social were coming out, and this was, you know, right between MySpace and Facebook as that transition was happening. So we created a widget that sat on people's computers and we would, you know, trailers and commercials would launch during things, events like MTV, you know, movie awards, things like that. But we wouldn't bring them to a website. We wouldn't bring them to a page. We would push them then directly to the end user through this widget. So what happened was the fans got cultural currency. They got the ability to be in control of the brand and they were the ones to share it. So they got credit for it. And allowing that to happen made them even stronger, made them support, allowed them to invite, and it built the circles. And, you know, even from a book sales perspective, when the film started, their production started on the film, there were about 1.25 million books in circulation. By the time the first film went to market, Thanksgiving, there were 37.5 million books in circulation.
Did you have some skin in that game, I hope?
I wish I did. Wish I did.
know, you're talking to a literary agent, so book
yeah,
to screen, screen to book, that's my market. Oh man.
And so that certainly helped them with, you know, what are the things a studio needs? They need credit facilities. They need, you know, new stories. They need access to talent and, you know, incredibly talented team there. But we definitely contributed, you know, to that through this effort, seeing a very holistic view of the business, not just, you know, the initial film, but how does it help you as a whole?
That's a good example. And by the way, I love the first Twilight. It's just so cool. And a lot of my friends and colleagues were in those movies, so and worked on them. Let's see, what did I want to touch on? I wanted to touch on the educator in you, Mike. If you were to coach a couple up-and-comers who have all of these generalist skills, Kevin Beggs, who is the chairman of Lionsgate, said he always saw himself as a generalist running a little empire of a company, right? Lionsgate, mm-hmm. A sprawl. So if you had some really creative young people coming up and saying, you know, Mike, you have all of this incredible range of skills and experience, and I have no idea what I want to do when I grow up, what would your advice be?
Be you. Very simply, be you. Happiness is far more important than wealth, than power, than title. You got to find a way to achieve it without selling yourself out. Find the things that make you happy. Say yes to experiences. Don't say no because you're afraid or you haven't done something. Say yes. You know, failure is how you learn. And so it continues. And if you're, you know, a creator, you know, it's funny, and this is the cynicism of being in business too long coming out, but it's not about how great your idea is. It's how close you are to the money that can make it happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. Those of you that can't see me, I'm putting my finger on my nose. By the way, those of you that can't see Mike, he's sitting in front of Buddy Hackett, a drawing of Buddy Hackett, in a very colorful room. Can you tell us about the Buddy Hackett poster behind you?
So Buddy Hackett there is a piece that was done by artist Robert Risco for the Desert Inn in Vegas. Before I went, you might know, remember that from the Robert Urich series, Vegas. But the Desert Inn was on its last days. It was, you know, as the Vegas was being rebuilt and new casinos were coming in, couldn't get any entertainers to perform there. So the idea was to get Robert Risco, this incredible artist, to come in, do caricatures of these entertainers. They would get one and the property would get one. And that's what lured people in. So Buddy Hackett, Ray Charles, Wayne Newton, Dionne Warwick, you know, loads of artists did that. And it was phenomenal work. Everybody was happy with it. And so I happened to wind up with a few of them. And Buddy Hackett's always been one of my favorites.
What are the parameters of pop culture? You think about public domain. I mean, what was pop culture in times of Mozart versus now? And is there a time period where pop exists and it stays pop culture?
I don't know if it's, you know, so I'm not a time traveler and I wasn't around during Mozart, as far as I know. I don't know if it's different. What's different now is distribution. And everyone, you know, is an influencer. Everyone is sharing information. We know more about people today than we ever did in the past. The mystery's kind of gone. And we're all proclaiming too much. And, you know, but that allows culture, and you see waves go through. You know, I don't know if people recognize when pop culture was hitting before, but now I would imagine that the waves are a little tighter and the frequency a little quicker.
How can other people find you? What are the best ways to reach you, Mike?
LinkedIn is great. LinkedIn's a really great way to find me. I gotta figure out, I think it's just Mike Tankel on LinkedIn. So easy enough. And when you post, it can give you links if you want. Social media is fine. Facebook, Instagram, do what I can there, but LinkedIn's probably best for many business stuff.
Mike, what would you say to your 18 to 22-year-old self?
Believe in yourself. Don't doubt yourself. Believe. Don't question things. Say yes. Go for the adventure.
Well, that's a wrap-up if I ever heard one. Perfect for Passion to Power. And it's been a privilege. And thank you for taking the time. And I'm so grateful to be able to share your story and experience.
Thank you, Michelle. It's a real pleasure. And I hope we get to keep speaking.
So thanks very much for listening to this episode, and please share all the episodes with your friends and colleagues. We appreciate your ratings and comments on Apple Podcasts and on social media. If you'd like more information about our programs and our special people and projects, please access www.morezap.com, More Zap Productions for Talent and Literary. And if you'd like to book a special one-on-one coaching or a group clinic or workshop, please access passion-power.com, and you can fill out our form there and make a request. Thanks again. Thank you.